Hello, beloved listeners to the Alicia Doss Live Your Love Show. We have such a heart-opening, inspiring guest today, Coot Blackson. Coot, would you like to say hello?
Hi there. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
We are completely delighted to have you. So we will start, as we always do, with an invocation, with calling in the light, and then I will tell you a lot more about Coot and why you should be as excited as I am to have him with us. So let's take a moment, and if you would, beloved listeners, and Coot, please place your hand on your heart. And just be aware of the gentle rising and falling of your chest, like you're drifting on the ocean of love and mercy. Just relax back and take a deep breath. Breathe in that love, and as you exhale, just let go, listeners, of anything less than love. Just really surrender in this moment to the precious present. This time, take a deep breath in through your crown chakra, through the top of your head, into your body, breathing in light, exhaling anything less than light. And this time, opening your heart, just breathe in love. And as you exhale, that love amplifies, just increases without you having to do anything. As beloved Mother, Father, God, we open in every way to the light as we continue to breathe in light and breathe out of anything less than light. We open to the light of the Holy Spirit, connecting to the spiritual presence and assistance imminently available to us in this moment. Just relaxing, allowing, receiving, being light, just letting it all go. Anything that has plagued us, we can give it all now to the ocean upon which we recline. Anything that holds us back, any stress, worries, that we might come together in the name of love. Let this show, each of us present, those who listen to the archives, all be blessed in every way for the highest good. And so be it. Amen, and blessed be. Okay, so I would love to tell you about Coot. Such a magical being in my experience. Coot is a beloved inspirational speaker and transformational teacher. He speaks at countless events he organizes around the world, as well as at outside events including AFEST, Young Presidents Organization, and Entrepreneurs Organization. He's a member of the Transformational Leadership Council, a select group of 100 of the world's foremost authorities in the personal development industry. Winner of the 2019 Unity New Thought Walden Award, Blackson is widely considered a next generation leader in the field of personal development. His mission is simple: to awaken and inspire people across the planet to access inner freedom, live authentically, and fulfill their true life's purpose. So, my listeners, that is quite an impressive bio, and I want to tell you just a little bit about my personal experience with Coot. So we have lots of friends in common, as we both attended the University of Santa Monica. Coot, I don't think you even know this, but I used to play your beautiful spoken word recordings before they were even offered to the public, as far as I'm aware, at Soul Dance.
Wow.
And I was always so struck by how, first of all, you have an amazing voice, as our listeners are going to hear a lot more of in a moment, but you have such a presence of love and just a natural rhythm of life that just flows through you. So those were always very popular at Soul Dance. And I also want you to know that I listened, of course, to The Magic of Surrender. And I was writing my own book proposal, and I was in that moment of frustration and creative block and just you know, stress. And so fortunately, I have a puppy, and I had to take a break. And so I took him for a walk, and I literally thought, Coop, I'm going to put on my own personal cheerleader. And, and it completely worked because you are so incredibly encouraging and generous with your spirit. So such a warm welcome today.
Oh, thank you. Really, really honored and privileged to know that. In some way, we've been connected even before this moment, and I've been looking forward to the conversation. So thank you.
Very much my pleasure. So listeners and readers, the book I'm talking about, which I would suggest you get both on Audible and Kindle and paperback, is, I guess that's all three, is The Magic of Surrender, a bestseller, one of at least two bestsellers, right, Coop?
Yes, my second book.
Second book, and the first is called You Are the What, also a bestseller. Came right out of the gate there, you did. And The Magic of Surrender is an incredible book, but I have to tell you, the way you read it is so rich. Mm-hmm. I feel like you embody your father's thousands of services, because you just transport me to another place in yours. So I would suggest, listeners, you buy the Audible, because you have to hear this storyteller. So this book is such a beautiful love story to your mother who passed. I won't say I'm sorry for your loss, because I know you reframe it in a gorgeous way of really finding the blessings in that. But I will say that I send love to your heart and just the warmest wishes that her presence comes upon you in that moment where you need it most.
Thank you.
Of course. And you know, my mother and father passed away 6 weeks apart in my arms about a year and a half ago. And I learned a lot about, of course, what happens when we pass and connecting to them after they passed. I would love to hear, when you connect to your, you talked about you experience her very present with you. Does she just come upon you? Do you go reaching to her soul? Would you tell us about that process, and especially for those of us who have had recent losses?
For me, it was strange. When my mother passed away, there was obviously grief, and I allowed myself the natural process of grieving. And I think it is important, even though we may have spiritual insight, spiritual understanding, that we're not just this physical body, that we are souls, and this physical body really is a temporary vehicle for our soul to navigate through in this dimension, in this lifetime. And I think even if we have the understanding, I think it's at least for me, it was important to acknowledge the human aspects of us and to allow the grieving process. And so when my mother passed away, there was grief, and the grief flowed, and I allowed it to flow as tears. But when I would feel the grief, it was strange. It was as though, as I would acknowledge the grief, feel the grief, allow it to move through my body, tears flowed. It was as though the strange feeling of the shape, the current shape of my heart would break. So there was like a heart breaking open. And it was as though it was breaking open to more. And it wasn't like broken. It was broken open to a deeper capacity, and there was more love. So my heart's current dimension to hold love was broken open, and then there was more love, and then there was another wave of grief, and then there was more love, and then there was another wave of grief, and then there was more love. And so each layer of grieving allowed for a deeper next level revelation of love to sort of be birthed. And as I would feel my mother and reflect on her, it was as though for the first time, in a very strange way, I was able to fully experience her without the form. And because there was no form, there was just her pure light, her pure energy, her pure essence, her pure frequency. And when I felt her energy as just light, it was as though there were no limitation. Like I could actually touch what she really essentially was without any limitations of the mind and the sort of human logic. It was just pure... her pure nature, and when I felt that nature of what she was, the profundity of love that I felt that she was in essence, her real essence, was so it was so vast that it's as though my heart broke open even more, feeling the love that she was, that I was, that she was. So there was this sense that there was no separation anymore. From my body to her body, from her personality to my personality, from me as her son and her as my mother, there was this sort of inherent recognition of the oneness of our being. And so this feeling that she was no longer separate from me, but actually inside me, if that makes sense. And so that closeness, when I say the closeness, it was like, it's not like me over here and my mother over there. It was like my mother within me, my mother as a part of me, my mother, her light as really my light, and we are the same light emanating together from within, no longer separated by a human construct, a physical construct, a physical body. And so I feel my mother, in that sense, I have the feeling of feeling my mother inside me and feeling her spirit inside me and feeling myself a part of her and her a part of me. And it's a very, you know, it's hard to explain, but that's how I felt her. And so in that sense, I never felt, even when she passed, I never felt separate from her. I never felt like she was gone. I actually felt, it's so weird, that's why I felt closer to her when she was dead and no longer physically here than... you know, and that was not something I was expecting. And so I feel her presence guiding me. I feel her spirit guiding me. And it's funny because when she passed away, there were actually many, many, many miracles that happened. Like one example was I had bought some land in Joshua Tree right before she passed away, maybe 6 to 7 months before she passed away. I had acquired this land in Joshua Tree, a significant, you know, acres of land. And at that time, it was very difficult to get construction loans. And, you know, it was just complicated. And I wasn't getting a construction loan to be able to build on it. And nothing was going through when all the applications were being rejected. And months before my mother passed, I had taken her, like a year before she passed, I had taken her to the land. She stood on the land, she put her arms up and she blessed the land, said, "This is sacred land." Then she was diagnosed, and I was trying to get all of these, you know, banks to give me a construction loan to build on it, and they were all being rejected. Literally a month after she had passed, somehow a bank, a financial institution I was, you know, connected with, and they gave me this construction loan. And I literally felt my mother's grace and my mother's blessing upon the land and the loan, and I felt like she brought this whole experience to me, and she facilitated that from the other side, so to speak, you know. And so I feel her, yeah, I feel her guiding me, and I feel her presence watching me, and I feel her nudging and her heart, you know, whispering in certain ways. So it's a huge blessing. It's a huge blessing.
Thank you, Kut. That was so beautiful, and I know that it gives those who have lost loved ones hope. It is such a tender and profound time when we go through that life passage, especially of a parent.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, your parents, your book, again, is also a love story to both of your parents. Their story is so beautiful. You had an African father, the man, Miracle Man, is that what he was called?
Yeah, my father was called the Miracle Man of Africa because, you know, my first memories as a young boy, I remember being five or maybe 6-7 years old, being lost in the crowd. And I was a chubby kid lost in the crowd, literally 1,000 people or so, let's say, surrounding me. And I remember seeing a crippled woman pick up the sand that my father, this man, walked on. He had no idea. He was just walking in prayer. And she picks up the sand, and she was crawling on the floor and stood up. And so you could call that a miracle. And so week after week, I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear and people stand up out of wheelchairs. My father would look at a woman in a wheelchair, and he would say, "Why are you in this wheelchair? You're not sick. Stand up. Do you believe?"
Wow.
"Yeah, I believe, but I haven't, you know, I haven't walked in 10 years. Do you believe or do you not believe? Is it one or the other? Because it can't be both. Which is it?" And somehow, if like, you know, my father's faith was so profoundly, like, unshakable, you know, like, I'm sure that if my father, you know, were to meet God in the physical somehow, symbolically, metaphorically, and God just was questioning if he was God or not, he would look at God himself and say, "Are you God? You're God. Remember that you're God." And my father had such faith. And so
wow.
I remember people coming in with crutches. And this was, I mean, this was every day. This was every week. This was a regular occurrence. So I grew up, you know, not thinking this was unusual. I literally grew up thinking this was everyone's experience, that this was normal. And only later on, maybe in my teens, did I realize, oh, maybe this wasn't the typical. But I think for me, it was a real blessing, you could say, to grow up with this sense of possibility. Yeah, so this was my father. He was considered the miracle man of Africa. He was the spiritual teacher. He built 300 churches in Africa. He built a huge church in London, but he was a very mystical, metaphysical, spiritual man. Went to India in the 60s. So I grew up in a very kind of non-traditional spiritual religious environment where my mother was Japanese and Buddhist and meditating with her, and my father was this sort of, you know, African siddha, so to speak. And it was a blessed, you know, had its own challenges, but it
sure.
was a blessing to grow up in this environment. Yeah,
amazing. So, what did that teach you? I mean, clearly to have faith, but what was your? I don't know if this is a fair question, but if you had to distill
yeah.
growing up with your father into one or two takeaways, what would that be?
Wow. Look, I mean, my father was not an easy human being. Let's just be clear. He was a character, a piece of work, but a great man, truly a great man. And so for me, you know, I remember having a conversation with my father, and his example and his deep, profound, unshakable trust in the divine gave me, I think, through osmosis, a profound trust in the divine, a profound willingness to surrender. And so I remember asking my father when I was maybe finally in my 20s and we finally began talking, because we didn't talk very much when I was a teenager. And I asked him, "Dad, like, how do you do these miracles? Like, what happens? You know, I'm in America, because I moved to America when I was 18, and, you know, there's all these healing modalities, there's Reiki, there's this, there's that, there's all these pranic this and blah, blah, blah." And he said, to his credit, he simply looked at me and he said, "Son, I don't do miracles. I have nothing to do with these miracles. I don't know anything about these miracles." I said, "Then how does it happen?" He said, "All I do is I simply get myself out of the way. And I simply surrender and I get myself out of the way. It's God that does the work. I just get myself out of the way, and it's God that does the work. And all I do is I see the perfection. I see the truth of who someone is." And he said, "All I know is that every single one of us, we are whole, we are perfect, we are complete, we are manifestations of the divine, we are children of God, and all I do is I just see the truth. And if someone is willing to meet me in that dimension, meet me in that knowing, meet me in that reality, then the truth is revealed in that instant. And so I have nothing to do with it, you know?" And so I, for me, that was always really profound, his unwavering trust in this infinite intelligence that is living us and breathing us. And when I would worry as a kid, as kids do sometimes, my father would look at me with this unwavering look, and he would say, "Son, why are you worrying? Did you bring yourself to this planet? Did you bring yourself here?" I'd be like, "Well, I didn't bring myself. You brought me here." And we would laugh. But he said, "If you didn't bring yourself here, and you didn't struggle to be here, and birth and existence is free, then surely that intelligence, that presence that brought you into this existence and incarnation, surely it knows. It knows exactly how to fulfill itself in you and through you and as you and in your life. Why are you stressing?" And so that was a profound thing for me. So many times now when people say, "How do I trust? How do I trust?" I kind of, you know, realize I'm pretty impacted by my father, and I think, how can we not trust when all of life and all of existence, the sun and the moon and the sky and the rivers and the fact that you and I, we are being breathed right now. There are trillions and trillions and trillions of cells that are interacting and dancing to even be able to have this conversation in spite of us without our conscious manifest intention. Like, we are being lived by this intelligence. So, like, every moment of existence is kind of like a living proof that we can trust life if we just bring our attention to that dimension of existence, you know?
Wow, that was just so inspiring and profound. I think you have married the best of your father's preaching with, you know, California joy and love. I'm inspired. So, Kut, I would love to hear a little bit more about, you know, your parents, your father, the Miracle Men of Africa, was betrothed to your mother, Japanese woman. Before they even knew what each other looked like, they knew they were soulmates. Came from completely different cultures. And I have to tell you, another thing we have in common is I'm also mixed race, the child of a platinum blonde Southern belle mother. Dying in the White House with JFK, and a dark Indian father.
Wow.
They both had arranged marriages and somehow ended up with each other at 18.
Wow.
There's a lot that goes in still. I don't know your experience, but still mine is there is still a lot that goes into being mixed culture, mixed race, and it's very rich, but there is challenge that can go with that. And my parents were not as fortunate as your parents, blessed. I'm sure it was all perfect, but they did not make it. Your parents did for 40 years. I would love to hear whatever's on your heart and soul to tell us about why. How do you think they made it? What did you learn about love from that unlikely but beautiful union?
Yeah. Wow. What a union. Jeez. My parents were unique humans, and you know, I think to be honest, it was a very challenging on a human dimension. It was a very challenging marriage.
Sure.
Just to give people a context, maybe in a minute or less, I'll kind of share how they met, if people are curious. But my father, when he was 8. This is in Ghana, West Africa, would have these visions of a Japanese guru. This Japanese guru would teach my father about life and the mysteries of existence and the cosmos. When my father was 15, he had us kind of soul into poor conversion in Ghana. This is in the 40s, by the way. And he saw the light, became a born-again Christian, and started healing people. He read the Bible, and he said, "Jesus said, the things I do, you can do these things and more. So, boom, be healed." And that's when thousands of people started coming to this teenager to be healed. My father built 300 churches from 15, 16, 17 to 37. Meanwhile, his first wife died. And so he has three kids, and he's in a store in Ghana, West Africa in the 70s. A book falls off the shelf, and he sees the face of this Japanese guru who's been coming to him in his dreams since he was a kid. And he couldn't believe that this guy is actually a real human being. And so he writes to this man, This man sends his son-in-law, effectively his son, to meet my father because there was no internet, there was no Facebook, there was no Zoom, to meet my father in Ghana, West Africa. The man is so impressed with my father's work, invites my father to go to Japan to meet the guru and to go on this huge sort of stadium lecture tour with the guru in Japan. My father accepts. My father says before he leaves, look, I'm looking for a wife. My first wife has died. So please pray for me because I believe in the power of prayer. And so the man says, absolutely. The son-in-law, goes back to Japan in Tokyo, gives a lecture. In his lecture, he announces the dates for when my father, the miracle man of Africa, is coming to go on a tour with the guru. And my mother grew up in this spiritual organization. So this great guru was her parents' teacher, her teacher. She is 28 at the time. And in Japan, if you're not married by 25, 24, 26, you're considered old and has been, you know. And so she's 28 and she's given up on love, basically, and doesn't know what to do. And so here's the secret. She basically surrenders and she says, God, this was her prayer. If anyone wanted to get married, this was her, the code. She says, God, I will marry anybody, anybody you tell me to marry. I don't care. Black, white, tall, short, rich, poor, a trash collector, street sweeper. I don't care who. Just make it clear that this is my divinely appointed soulmate in this lifetime. I totally surrender. I don't care who it is. You just make it clear to me. I follow your direction. She's in the audience. She hears about this African man who she has not seen a picture of coming to Japan to meet her guru. She feels a knowing in her body. This is my husband. My father is in London on his way to Japan in transit for 3 weeks. He's in meditation. He gets this intuitive nudging. You're going to meet your wife. He goes to the mailbox. There is an envelope from Japan. Meanwhile, recognize my father doesn't speak Japanese. My mother doesn't speak English. They can't even communicate verbally in human language. There's a letter from my mother that's translated by her sister in English, and it's in basically, you know, Japanese style, very, very polite. I look forward to hearing you speak in Japan. He writes back, so nothing romantic. He writes back and says, would you be open to moving to Ghana? She writes back and says, if it's God's will. He writes back and says, yes, it's God's will, marry me. They basically agree to get married, sight unseen, having never spoken, can't even speak the same language. He goes to Japan, goes on a lecture tour with the guru, meets my mother for the first time. They basically, you know, agree to get married. Now, my father has no money by Japanese standards. So, again, he goes into prayer. This is the key. He goes into prayer. God says, just chill, relax. Everything is under control. 6 weeks later, he goes to the mailbox, and there is an envelope. Because he has to put together a wedding. There's an envelope. He opens the envelope. $7,000 in U.S. cash. All it says, anonymous, this is for your wedding. That's it. They get married and have me. And so that's how they met. You know, they met in a state of surrender. And I think that that's what I would invite people to sit with in terms of a key to their story. They were totally surrendered to God's will. They were totally surrendered to divine will. And even though they're human, honestly, sometimes I thought they should have gotten divorced as a kid. Sometimes I thought they should, there was a mistake and they should never have been together. But they had this deep understanding that they were not coming together for the personality. They were not coming together just for their egos. You know, you didn't take me to the movies. You didn't do this. They knew. They had a deeper understanding that they knew that they had a soul contract, that they had karma to fulfill, that there was a deeper spiritual reason that they were coming together, and that's what they were surrendered to. They were surrendered to the divine will in their relationship. And that, I believe, despite the cultural difficulties and differences and how difficult my father was sometimes as a man, despite all of that, that deeper knowing is what enabled them to persevere and move through and surrender through the challenges. And that's what, I think that's the only thing that kept them together. Because if it was about the ego and the humor, I don't think it would have lasted. And because of that, that enabled them to move through, you know. And so I think that's been a secret. They surrendered their relationship to God. And that was the grace that kind of kept them together, even though it was very challenging. And so, you know, I'm fond of saying now that the deeper I go in my own spiritual path, the deeper I go in my own evolution, in my own spiritual practice over the years, it's as though, this might sound strange, Alicia, but it's as though the deeper I go, the less choice I feel I have.
Yeah.
The freer I actually feel. Before I was like, oh, the more choice I feel I have, the more on the surface I stay in my ego, the more choice I feel I have, actually, the more limited I am. So I think that the real freedom is in surrendering to our soul's intention. And sometimes, you know, what our soul guides us to do and what our soul wants and what our soul is seeking is sometimes different than what our personalities, our conditioned ego wants. And I think the real freedom is to bring ourselves into alignment with our soul and live in coherence with that intentionality, because that's the freedom, you know, and that to me, that's the surrender.
Absolutely. Yeah. That has been my experience as well. That it really makes life so much more simple and
yes.
And more of an adventure.
Yes.
To really surrender and receive our guidance and receive our life really as a working and walking miracle. Sometimes our mind is, you know, very insistent on what it wants and thinks it needs. How do you lasso that part of you and lovingly get it to go in the direction that you perceive as the highest good?
Yeah, I think you mentioned the word loving cooperation because I think in our culture there's this sort of misconception that surrender is weak or surrender is passive, or that if you surrender, you're going to get hurt, you're going to be a doormat, you're going to be a victim, you won't manifest your goals, dreams, and desires. But I think if people really understand the true essence of surrender, then they really understand that actually in letting go and surrendering, like, what if you got more, you know, more than you could have planned and intended and projected and manipulated and forced and just manufactured for yourself? And so I think surrender is really, like, I want to propose to people as we have the conversation that surrender, the true essence of surrender, is perhaps the most powerful thing that we can do. When you look at Jesus and Buddha and, you know, Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa, they all surrendered themselves. And in that surrender, they were able to transcend their human limitations and they tapped into another dimension of life. And life began to manifest through them. And so I would also like to invite people to think that, like, yes, it can feel as though surrender is difficult sometimes. It can feel as though surrender is so hard. It can feel as though surrender is, like, so terrifying and difficult. And so what we tend to do is resist. But what resists surrender and what feels hard in terms of surrender, what resists surrender is the ego. And the ego is that aspect of ourselves that we are so identified with, that we perceive ourselves to be based on name, form, body, past history, memories, traumas, you know, successes, failures from the past, and the degree to which we hold onto our sense of self as that, and the degree to which we've been conditioned and reinforced to believe we are that, is also the degree to which it can feel difficult to surrender. And so for the ego, surrender is difficult and surrender can feel challenging, because really, you know, the ego's job is to reinforce its existence and to protect us from being hurt like we were hurt again. And so I think when we can understand that, then we can also step back, because I also want to just get people to think that even though it feels as though surrender is hard and difficult and we tend to resist as a self-protective mechanism, that surrender is in fact your natural state. That surrender is actually your natural state. Like if I were to, for those, if you could visualize for a moment, I'm making a fist and I'm holding a pen, and I'm holding this pen very, 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 very tightly. As I'm holding this pen very tightly, my fist is tightening, and at first it feels painful, but if I hold this pen long enough, eventually this contracted, tightened position starts feeling normal. And if I say let go, surrender, it's like, well, that is actually the easiest thing, to just drop the pen and let go. But because we've gotten so conditioned to hold on to this contracted sense of positionality, letting go can feel difficult. And so, to me, we're born free. When we were, as children, children, we were born in touch with our true divine nature. Children, I think, when we just when we incarnate, we're in touch with our essence. We are surrendered to the moment. We're surrendered to what we are. But we meet our parents. We incarnate into this human existence, and we learn to sort of, you know, we meet our parents, and maybe there's trauma, maybe there's hurt, maybe there's dysfunction, maybe our parents were great people, but they weren't emotionally able to meet our needs, so to speak. So we learned all sorts of strategies to disconnect, shut down, not feel, suppress our feelings, suppress our emotions, and we held onto that as a self-protective mechanism. We also learned the way of being to go into the world to get love and validation and approval, and we started to contort ourselves into a particular shape in order to get this love, validation, approval, and we became a version of ourselves that we actually thought, this is who I am. But this conditioned version of ourselves is not who we really are. And so the degree to which we believe ourselves to be this conditioned version of ourselves is also, I think, the degree to which surrender can seem very scary, and surrender can seem terrifying, and surrender can feel like a death to what we believe ourselves to be. And so I think if we can just first recognize that the ego isn't even a real thing. It's a process. It's a process of identification. Like a bicycle is a thing, but the pedaling is a process. And so we believed ourselves to be this thing, this coot structure, this Alicia structure, John, Susie, Bob, you know, whoever we believe ourselves to be. And with that comes a whole, you know, complex structure of conditioned identities that we hold on to. We believe ourselves to be that, but when we realize that this ego structure that we believe ourselves to be is really it's a process of identification that is not as real as we have believed ourselves to be. And so I think if we can start to observe the ego, observe what we believe ourselves to be, and begin to cultivate a different relationship with it. What you said, I think, was so important, which was loving cooperation. Many times what we tend to do in recognition, oh, the ego is resisting, is we tend to try to force surrender, and we tend to try to sort of beat surrender into our being, like, got to surrender now, rather than recognizing that the ego was just created to protect us, and this resistance was created to try to keep us safe in the best way we knew how to do at that particular moment, at that particular stage of our life, at age 5. Maybe it works for us at age 5, maybe it works for us at age 7, but it's kind of limiting us now at age 17, age 25, age 35. So rather than forcing surrender, what I found is if we can just acknowledge the resistance and embrace the resistance and observe the resistance and just begin to get in touch with the resistance and the fear that arises when we consider letting go and surrender, because it can be scary to sort of let go, because who will I be if I let go, and what will happen if I let go, and bad things might happen, and so, so now I have to hold on and not surrender. And so if we can just meet that with a loving compassion, to be able to even surrender to the seeming reality that we may not be so surrendered in this moment, and that's okay, and surrender to not being surrendered, which is even a deeper layer of surrender, and it's the underlying relationship with surrender and with our ego that's more important than even surrender itself, then there's a deeper level of surrender, so then we can hold our ego with light, with tenderness, with compassion. And I found that when we can just hold the patterned, conditioned ego self with just gentleness, understanding, then rather than forcing surrender, then slowly, as ego feels safer, there's a relaxation. And as we meet our ego with love, and that's where the healing happens, bringing loving to those parts of ourselves, to that aspect of ourselves, then ego can sort of, shall we say, relax and slowly open naturally, and healing can happen, and love can seep into those wounded parts of ourselves, and opening can happen, and surrender can begin blossoming and happening from within.
Wow, that was like a poem. That was not even like a poem. That was poetic. Thank you. Thank you for that. That was very beautiful and inspiring. And listeners, I wanted to tell you how you can spend time personally with Coot, coming right up this summer in the beautiful Bali. He has an amazing retreat called Boundless Bliss Bali, July 28th to August 8th. And to find out more about it, you go to www.boundlessblissbali.com. And I'll also send the link out with my promotion. And then, of course, The Magic of Surrender is the book that we've been talking about, which I cannot recommend highly enough. As you can tell, we all get lit on fire with Coot's enthusiasm and incredible faith and inspiration. The book really conveys that. You can find all about all of this at www.cootblackson.com, KUTEBLACKSON.com. So you can find his books there and all about Bali. Is there anything you want to tell us about Bali?
Yeah, just if anyone here feels inspired from the conversation, maybe you feel a calling in your soul and in your heart to make a difference on this planet, and you have a sense that you have been, you know, put in this world for a purpose that is bigger than yourself, and you feel ready. You know, I think the times that we're going through, I believe, are an invitation for us all to step up and share our gifts with the world. And so if you're someone that feels ready to make an impact and be of service to humanity, then, yeah, I would love to see you on this journey. It's a unique 12-day immersion transformational experiential seminar training without walls, where I use Bali as the backdrop to help people heal, past, connect to their deeper, authentic selves, and share their gifts with the world, and catapult you forward into living your true purpose and calling in this lifetime. And so it would be an honor. And, you know, it's for leaders, for those that are leaders. But I believe that in order to truly lead, you have to lead yourself first. And so it's a deep dive transformational experience.
Beautiful. It sounds amazing. And, of course, we learn best when we teach.
Yes.
So there's the selfish reason, and, of course, the selfless reason is, which is also very selfish, is to really allow ourselves to answer the calling. And, as you can tell, Coot is very encouraging and inspiring in that way to really call us forward into who we were born to be. So I hope you can join him in Bali. Again, go to www.boundlessblissbali.com or cootblackson.com. And again, I'll send out promotion for both of those. So let's just take a moment and experience a little bit more of the magic of surrender that Coot has been so graciously sharing with us. So again, just come into this moment. Take a deep breath in. Breathe in love, and as you exhale, just let go. Really open to receive, open to let go. Open and allow your heart to break open to more love, to have a deeper capacity to love. And just see your heart as big as the mountains that surround you, or the ocean, or the trees. See your heart growing outside of your body, for indeed, that is who you truly are. Let's just receive the blessing of a loved one who has passed, whether it's a relative or it could be a spiritual master. Just first acknowledge your beautiful, tender heart, your humanity, and you can again place a hand on your heart and just feel your humanity. And if there's any remaining grief or missing of a loved one, just press loving into your heart. Really increase the loving in your heart of hearts. And on the count of three, just pull that grief out and offer it up to spirit. One, two, three, pull that grief out and just offer it to God. It can be this easy and this sweet. And now experience your loved one beyond the form, their energy as essence so vast. Truly, truly know they are inside of you. They haven't gone anywhere except perhaps deeper in your heart. Really open your heart and connect to them right here within you. And receive their blessing and their guidance. Do you hear a message from them for you? Just take a moment and see what you hear. Take a deep breath in and breathe in that guidance and that blessing. And as you do, your loved one helps you expand into the truth of who you are, into your soul and beyond, into God's soul. Breathe in that unshakable faith like the miracle man of Africa. Let's take on that incredible trust in the divine. Let's embody that, borrow that for a moment, for it is infinite, for it comes from source. And affirm this moment that you will get out of the way and allow God to do miracles not only around you, but through you and as you, for you are a living miracle. You are the manifestation of God and the child of God. Meet God in that reality so the greater truth of who you are as a leader of love and light is revealed. Open and allow your mind to become one with the divine intelligence that knows exactly how to fulfill itself within you. Open and surrender that you might know that you are living proof that you can trust life. And so just this moment on a deep breath, breathing in, on the exhale, surrender your identity with ego. Surrender on this next breath identity with mind, with any conditioned version of self. Just let it go. Just see that small self that quivers and holds itself back in your right hand like a dove. And just close your hand around it, lift it up. Physically lift it up, and on the count of three, again, we'll let that dove go into the light. One, two, three, let go of that self. That easy. But you might really receive that healing all through you and know that you were born, that you were born the beloved, and as you surrender, you receive the liberation you have devoutly sought. You receive all that you have been looking for. And it was always hidden right within you, around you, as the miracle of life and love. You can let go. Trust and know yourself as God, as divine, as the passion of life that loves itself. And so be it. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. And Coot, love to hear your closing thoughts.
Wow. I think every moment of life is precious. Every moment of life is grace. And I'm just guided to invite people to sit with and remember that we are all going to die. There's no way out in this physical incarnation. So hold death close, not as a morbid thing, because ultimately what we truly are is beyond death, beyond birth. But life is short, and none of us know when that moment will come. And so how would you need to live your life in such a way? How would you need to love in such a way? What would you need to give in such a way so that if death came at any moment, you could be ready? Every moment of life is precious, is sacred, and is a gift from God. So live and love with no regrets.
So beautiful. Coot, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such a pleasure and such an inspiration.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate the love, the soulfulness, the warm welcome, and the grace of the interview. So thank you so much.
It's been such a pleasure, and I wanted to tell you listeners again that you can find Coot at www.coot.com, and think about Bali in July, and at the very least, pick up the magic of surrender. I promise it will change you. Beloved listeners, thank you so much for being here. Coot, again, thank you so much, and many blessings to you.
Thank you.
God bless us all, and goodbye for now.